Hare Krishna. Welcome to the third day of our seminar on the sacred rivers. We've spoken about Ganga, and yesterday we were discussing Yamuna. We could not quite complete the discussion. We'll try to complete that discussion on Yamuna today, and then we'll speak about Godavari as well as Saraswati. Let's see how it goes in terms of time. And tomorrow we'll talk about the other two or three important rivers. There are actually so many sacred rivers, and there is so much to say about each one of them. There's much folklore as well associated with each river. Anyway, so coming back to the Yamuna, we traced the course of the Yamuna as she flowed down from Yamunotri, from Kalind mountain, from the glacier there, and she came right down through the Himalayas, and then she came into the holy land of Braj, the land of Lord Krishna, where she coursed through many, many pastime places, and there are many ghats, places which are especially made so that people can enter or descend into the river. And we discussed some of those important ghats. There are actually many, many ghats. And it is only in some of them that the Yamuna flows, touching the ghats all year round, because the Yamuna has changed her course considerably. Now it's been 5,000 years since Krishna's time. Since Krishna's physical manifest presence. So anyway, having passed through Braja, we saw that. Then she flows down and comes to Prayag. Prayagraj is today known as Allahabad, and this is the most famous confluence of all. This is where the Yamuna, the Ganga, and the Saraswati meet together. We'll talk about the Saraswati later today. The Ganga and Yamuna are clearly visible, whereas the Saraswati is not so much visible. But it is called the confluence of the three, so it's Triveni. Triveni Sangam. Sangam means a confluence. It is said here that if one bathes in this confluence, then one becomes liberated. And especially at certain auspicious times, like the Kumbh Mela, which I briefly referred to yesterday, millions of people come there, and in the bitter cold, in the freezing water, they bathe. And they live there on the banks of the Triveni Sangam for that whole period. Lord Chaitanya also came here. He bathed in the Magh month, auspicious Magh month. He bathed here. He also went to the temple of Veni Madhav. At each place, there is so much to discuss. There's so many temples, pastimes that happened there. But suffice it to say here at this point that Mahaprabhu visited the temple of Veni Madhav, chanted, danced there, took bath in the Triveni Sangam, and then moved on. So let's talk about the identity of Yamuna Devi. Who is she? The Agni Puran mentions her as a black deity. She is blackish in complexion, a little darkish in complexion, and therefore she is also called Krishna. When there's a long A, the long vowel A, it's feminine. So Krishna is the masculine. That's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But when you stretch the A, Krishna, that's the name for Yamuna. It's also a name for Draupadi, because she was also somewhat dark complexioned, as was Krishna. So the feminine Krishna refers to Yamuna as well as Draupadi. So in the material world, she appears as the daughter of the sun god, Vivasvan, Surya Dev. And as I mentioned yesterday, he had twins, Yam and Yami. Of course, Surya Dev had other sons also. But in this context, these two are the most important ones. It is said that when Vivasvan came to Sanjana, who was his wife, or one of his wives, then she could not bear his effulgence. You know, try looking up at the sun in midday, it's not easy. So she could not bear the effulgence, and she closed her eyes as he approached her. And he said, because you have restrained yourself in my association, therefore the child who is born out of this will be restrained, and therefore will take away everybody's life. So that was Yamaraj. So his duty is to take away everybody's life. And he does that as a service to Krishna. It's a thankless job. Nobody likes Yamaraj. If you take a popularity poll amongst all the demigods, Yamaraj will surely not figure anywhere. The demigods who give all sorts of material benedictions will figure right up there in the popularity poll. But Yamaraj is perhaps amongst the greatest of all the devotees, the demigods. But he does a job which is quite thankless, because that is the reason for the existence of this material world. There are rebellious souls here who want to be independently enjoying of Krishna. So they are placed here. And Durga Devi, she subjects them to all sorts of material miseries. Independently trying to enjoy this world, the living entities act sometimes piously, sometimes sinfully, and then they have to face the reactions. Inevitably death comes. And then Yamaraj will, through his messengers, take away the soul and the subtle body of the living entity, take him to his abode, and there's a judgment in his court. And the next destination of that living entity is decided. So Yamaraj is much feared by people at large. But then later he felt compassionate and he blessed Sanjana and said, but the other one, the next who comes, will actually free everyone from birth and death. And that was Yami or Yamuna. So Yamaraj and Yamuna both are very exalted devotees of Krishna, but they perform opposite functions. It is a duty of the brother to keep the living entities in the cycle of birth and death, and it is a service of the sister to free everybody from the cycle of birth and death. Very, very interesting. So these two, who have slightly blackish complexions, Yama and Yami, also have their golden counterparts, golden complexion counterparts. The golden complexioned counterpart of Yamaraj is called Dharmaraj. He's a deity whom you may have heard about, who then expanded as Yudhishthir Maharaj, yes? And her golden counterpart is Vishakha Devi. Vishakha Devi, the gopi. It's quite interesting that Yamuna, she is there in the spiritual world, and she is an expansion ultimately of Srimati Radharani. How so? One of the bodily expansions, Kaya Vyuha, of Srimati Radharani is her intimate, confidential Sakhi, Vishakha Devi. Vishakha Devi expands to become a gopi called Viraja. And it is this Viraja who expands to become Yamuna. And then she descends into this material world in the form of the river. So this has been confirmed by Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan. So Yamuna is the liquid form of Srimati Vishakha Devi, who expands as Viraja. So just as the Lord expands himself into so many expansions and incarnations, and many of them descend into this world, so do his associates and devotees in the spiritual world. They are also capable of expanding themselves and manifesting their presence in various dimensions and in various realms, often at the same time. simultaneously in order to facilitate and enhance the Lord's pleasure and to fulfill His purposes. Yesterday we also spoke a bit about how they're a good pair of siblings, and they're very fond of each other. And she once called her brother at Vishram Ghat for prasadam, and he was very happy. And she asked for the blessing that all those who come on that particular day, the day after Deepavali, and take bath at Vishram Ghat in the Yamuna, will become freed from his clutches, and that he will not approach them. And he was surprised, but then he, out of affection for his sister, he granted that benediction. So therefore you will see many, many brothers and sisters come to Mathura on that day. And then they bathe there hoping that they will get the mercy of Yamuna Devi. And her deity, by the way, is her vehicle is a tortoise. She's on a tortoise. Maybe you can see that here. We don't see the tortoise here, perhaps. But in Vrindavan, she can have any form like this. She holds flowers to serve the Lord. But sometimes the deity of Yamuna is shown on a tortoise, and she holds a water pot in her hand. So why is Yamuna so important for us as devotees of Krishna and as followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who came to teach the mood of Vrindavan for loving Krishna? Just see, from the very beginning, Yamuna has been identified with Krishna's pastimes. So when Krishna appeared in the prison of Kamsa to Devaki and Vasudev, he initially appeared in his four-armed form, and then at the request of Devaki, he converted himself into his two-armed baby form. And out of fear for his well-being, Vasudev took him and crossed the Yamuna River. The doors of the prison miraculously opened. His shackles of iron miraculously opened. He became free. And he put him in a little basket, placed the basket on his head, and then he started walking. And it started raining. Anantashesh came and became like an umbrella over baby Krishna. And then as Vasudeva was walking, he came to the Yamuna. And the Yamuna was foaming and in spate because of heavy rainfall. She was flooded. And there were fierce currents of the Yamuna flowing. And Vasudeva was thinking, how should I cross over? But as he stepped in, Yamuna, realizing that this was her worshipable Lord Krishna in the baby form, she separated. And then Vasudev walked in through the Yamuna, and the level of the Yamuna reduced very considerably in the portion that Vasudev was crossing over in. But at that time, in her ecstasy of doing service to Krishna, she could not hold herself back. She wanted to touch the lotus feet of Krishna. She had a wonderful opportunity now. She was not about to let go of that opportunity. So how to do that? Now there's Vasudev here, and Krishna is either, some pictures they show him in the arms, some pictures they show him being carried in a little basket on his head. So she lunged forward. Her waves became like her arms. And she was rising and trying to touch Krishna's lotus feet. And every time she moved up in panic, Vasudev was lifting Krishna higher and higher, trying to save him. And Yamuna was even lunging higher to reach, to touch Krishna's lotus feet. And at that time, Vasudev in panic cried out. This is a folklore in Braj. In the local language, he shouted out, "Koi le lo, koi le lo." That means, somebody take this Krishna. Mere lala ko koi le lo. So somebody take this Krishna. Koi means someone. Le lo means please take. So therefore the point, the spot at which he crossed over, that place is called Koile Ghat, even today. Koile Ghat. Someone please take him. Then with a little lunge, Yamuna's waters touched Krishna's lotus feet, and having fulfilled her purpose, she immediately receded and came back to normal so that Vasudev could easily cross over. So we see right from the beginning, Yamuna has played such an important role. And then once Krishna was in Gokul, of course, there were so many pastimes that happened there, one after the other, including the subduing of the Kaliya demon, where the Kaliya had poisoned the little pond that was an extension of the Yamuna. And the cowherd boys and the cows would go and every day drink the waters of the Yamuna, which were crystal clear, fresh and sweet and refreshing. But on this occasion, they went to this part of the Yamuna, where this little lake was there, Kaliya Hrada. Hrada means a lake. And they all fell down unconscious. They actually lost their life. And there followed the celebrated Kaliya Damana Leela, the pastime of Krishna subduing Kaliya demon. So Krishna personally climbed up a kadamba tree on the bank of the Yamuna, slapped his arms like a wrestler, and jumped into the Yamuna. So there were numerous occasions like this when Lord Krishna personally let Yamuna Devi touch his lotus feet. And here he was completely in the waters of the Yamuna. Similarly, later on, he did so many pastimes in the water, in the Yamuna water with the gopis. Sometimes he would do it at Manasi Ganga and some of the other lakes and kunds in Braj. And often he would do it in the Yamuna River. These boating pastimes were called the Nauka Vihar. Sometimes he would have pastimes of this sort with the gopis, where they would spray water or sometimes color water on each other. So Krishna performed many, many such pastimes in the waters of Yamuna. So she became exceedingly fortunate and glorified, because the Lord chose her to be there whilst he was performing his pastimes. And even when Krishna personally did not descend into the Yamuna, she was the witness to all the pastimes that happened when Krishna was there. And especially the Rasa Leela and Krishna's playing the flute. There you see a little depiction of the Yamuna flowing by and Krishna standing there playing the flute. Actually, he stands under the Vanshi Vata, the banyan tree, the Vata Vriksha. And there he plays the flute on the full moon night of the autumn season, Sharad Ritu, the autumn season. And then the gopis come running to the bank of the Yamuna, and there ensues the famous Rasa dance. So standing on the Yamuna is something that is mentioned in so many descriptions in the scriptures and also the poetry composed by great devotees. So Yamuna is a very, very essential associate of the Lord in his pastimes in Braj. Actually, she lives eternally in the spiritual world in Goloka Vrindavan. And even though she eternally exists there, as does Govardhan, somehow, inconceivably, by the Lord's arrangement, they are so-called created at some point in time. You see, the concept of time is so bewildering and inconceivable for us that we cannot fathom it. In the spiritual world, time is present in terms of the present continuous. So it just flows. It doesn't make a distinction like it does in the material world of past, present and future. And there is still action going on in the spiritual world. So we have all these associates like Yamuna and Govardhan there. But at some point in time, as a pastime, they appear. And that is also an eternal phenomenon. So when Krishna wanted to descend into the material world, he approached Srimati Radharani and said, "It's time for me to go down to the material world to appear on the earth. So please descend with me." And she said, no, unless Vrindavan Dham descends, unless there is Yamuna, unless there is Govardhan, I'm not going to come down because I cannot leave. Vrindavan. So Krishna smiled and said, but they have already descended and they have prepared the way for us to descend also. So then she was very happy and then she descended along with Krishna. In the Garga Samhita and in the Brahma Vaivarta Puran, there is an elaborate description of the pastimes that happened in Goloka Vrindavan that led to Yamuna Devi descending here. But we will not go into that because it's a very lengthy pastime. Suffice it to say that somehow or the other, by the arrangement and mercy of Srimati Radharani, Yamuna Devi descended into the material world from the spiritual world. She left Goloka Vrindavan and she was joined by Ganga, who was coming from the Navadvip section of Goloka. Both these happen in the opulent sections of Goloka. And so the two waters merge together, Ganga and Yamuna in the spiritual world. And then, as they flowed on towards the material world, they came to that point where Vamana Dev pierced the covering of the universe. We discussed this pastime in relation to the descent of Ganga into the material world day before yesterday. Now, the mystery here is that along with the Ganga water, there was also Yamuna water. So the waters of the Yamuna and Ganga both ultimately had come from Goloka Vrindavan. They traveled all through the spiritual world, past all the Vaikuntha planets, past the impersonal spiritual effulgence, the Brahma Jyoti. And then they came into the material universe through the hole that had been created by the piercing of that cover by Lord Vamanadeva's lotus toenails. So they descended. And the course of Yamuna as she entered the universe was the same as that for Ganga. You will remember, we discussed day before yesterday, that as Ganga came into the material universe, then she came to Dhruva Loka. Then she went to Saptarishi Loka, the planet of the seven sages. And she was taken to Chandra Loka in the celestial skyway. She eventually came to Mount Meru, the abode on top of which is Brahma. And then from there were four branches, and the southern branch eventually came to the Himalayas. And that is where then the Ganga flowed down. She became a glacier because she came at a very high altitude. She transformed into ice, and then from that ice she emerged. We also spoke about how Ganga's flow was stopped by Lord Shiva. He resisted or restrained her flow in the matted locks of his hair. In any case, Ganga then came to Himalayas. Now, Yamuna was also there. So as Ganga made one branch, Yamuna made another branch. And at the Kalinda mountain, she separated out. And then she came at Yamunotri, and then she began her flow. So this is the history of the origin and the descent of Yamuna from Goloka Vrindavan onto the earth planet. Very fascinating. So then Ganga and Yamuna, they were together till the Himalayas. They separated at the Himalayas and they met again at Prayag, the confluence, the Triveni Sangam, where Ganga and Yamuna meet together. And as they were proceeding from the Yamuna, from the Triveni Sangam, towards the sea, and as they approached the delta, then Yamuna started speaking to Ganga. And she said, "All glories to you, O Ganga Devi. You are the purifier of all the three worlds. You have risen from the lotus feet of Krishna, and all the three worlds sing your glories. Unfortunately, at this point, I have to separate from you. So please forgive me if I have committed any offenses at your lotus feet." Because now Ganga Devi had Yamuna Devi had to go back to Goloka Vrindavan via the sea. So via the sea, she would go, travel towards Goloka, pass the Loka Loka mountain, and then go back to Goloka Vrindavan. Because her job was done. She had come here to the earth and she would go back. But Ganga, she would stay on. She would have to go from the ocean into the nether regions, that is the Rasatal planets, the lower planets, the subterranean planets. So at the mouth of the Ganga and the Yamuna with the sea, the two parted. So Yamuna was speaking like this to Ganga. Then Ganga also said, "Hey Yamune, my obeisances to you as well. In fact, it is you who are the purifier of all the three worlds. You have manifested from the left side of Krishna. Indeed, you are his very life force. And not just me, but even the residents of this spiritual world, they all offer prayers to you. So I offer my humble obeisances at your lotus feet again and again. Anyone who contacts you in any way becomes eligible to enter into the divine pastimes of Radha and Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. Unfortunately, I have been ordered by Lord Krishna to go to Patala Loka, so I will have to separate from you at this point. I am really fearing our separation and longing for the time when I will be able to return to Goloka Vrindavan and be with you serving Radha and Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan again. So please forgive my offenses once again." And in this way, when the Ganga and Yamuna met the ocean, they parted ways. And we see how when the Ganga came down, Yamuna also came down. So the Ganga and Yamuna are so intertwined in this world. They have such a history that goes back together. But nevertheless, for devotees of Krishna, even the Ganga and Yamuna both are glorious. Yamuna is more so, for reasons that I just mentioned, because she was such an active and intimate participant and witness of Krishna's pastimes in Brajabhumi. And Vraja, after all, is Krishna's home. So there is a discussion the acharyas have made, especially Srila Jiva Goswami and others, about the relative importance of Ganga and Yamuna. It is said that both Ganga and Yamuna are amartya, which means they are transcendental. But yet, because Yamuna has a more direct connection with Krishna in Braj than does Ganga, therefore Yamuna is considered more important. She associates with Krishna in all Leelas, but especially the Sakya Leela and the Madhuri Leela of Lord Krishna in Brajabhumi. So because of her intimate association with Krishna in these pastimes, she is considered superior to the Ganga. Of course, by great fortune, the Ganga was also blessed to have the touch of the lotus feet of the Lord and to witness his pastimes, but when he came as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and she flowed as the Ganga past Navadvip, and that was where she got the mercy of Mahaprabhu, just as Yamuna got in Braj. Also, one time, Srila Jiva Goswami quoted from the Varaha Puran to explain that there is no difference between the Ganga and the Yamuna. But when the Ganga is sanctified 100 times, then it becomes the Yamuna. He stated this one time also at a debate that was held in the city of Agra, which is not too far from Vrindavan. And the topic of the discussion was, which is superior, Ganga or Yamuna? And Jiva Goswami established by logic based on the scripture and by citing numerous scriptural references that actually Yamuna was superior. That Ganga came from the lotus feet of the Lord undoubtedly, but Yamuna was actually his consort. So he emerged victorious in that debate, and having established that Yamuna was superior, Akbar heard about this. Akbar was the Mughal king. He was stationed in Delhi, that was his capital city. So he was a contemporary of Akbar, of Jiva Goswami. So he was quite impressed with Jiva Goswami, actually. And he also had the personal association, perhaps. But he sent a message to Jiva Goswami saying that, I want to offer you some gifts. What can I give you? And do you know what Jiva Goswami asked for? Paper. He asked for paper. Now, when the king of the country comes and asks you, I want to help you, I want to give you something, please ask for something, we don't ask for a notebook or a diary. But now paper is so common. You can just go and buy it for a little amount, small quantity of money. But in those days, paper was a rare commodity. They would write on manuscripts. And before Kali Yuga began, there was no need for writing even, because it was all oral. A-U-R-A-L. Oral, O-R-A-L, spoken, and then oral, heard, A-U-R-A-L. So the teacher would speak, the students would hear, and they would remember. But as Kali Yuga began, then people started losing their capacity to remember. So then the script had to come into play, and then writing, and then you needed, earlier there were manuscripts like on palm leaves. And finally, somewhere in the medieval ages, then paper came into existence. But that was only for the royalty, because it was very expensive. So Akbar supplied Jiva Goswami with a lot of paper. And there's a second thing that Jiva Goswami asked Akbar for. He said, this is the holy abode of Lord Krishna. So please pass an edict or a law that there should be no killing of animals in Braj, in the whole Brajamandal area. And Akbar granted that request. Apart from the fact that nobody there actually killed, because they were all saintly people living there, nevertheless, sometimes princes from the royal families of the Mughals or wherever, they might just come through for hunting animals. So even that was stopped. So this is something about the Ganga and the Yamuna. And Lord Chaitanya's association with the Yamuna is also quite interesting to hear about. Anytime Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw a river, he remembered Vrindavan. And he would go into a state of devotional ecstasy. And often he would jump into the river, thinking it to be Yamuna. When Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas in Katwa, he immediately headed out for Vrindavan. But he was restrained by Nityananda Prabhu and the others. And finally he decided he would go to Jagannath Puri. But on the way, before that happened, before that decision was taken, from Katwa he just went along. He walked and walked and walked. And then he came to the Ganga. And he thought that the Ganga was a Yamuna. And so he asked the cowherd boys, which is the way to Vrindavan? Nityananda Prabhu had already approached them and told them that this is Ganga, but tell him this way, point towards Shantipur. So it was a transcendental trick. So the cowherd boys over on the banks of the Ganga at that point, they said, yeah, yeah, it's this way, Vrindavan is like this. And so, moving along the western bank of the Ganga, then he saw the Ganga there and in great ecstasy jumped into the river, thinking it to be the Yamuna. And then he came out again. With great difficulty, the devotees, including Nityananda Prabhu, pulled him out of the water. And he came on the banks and he didn't have a change of clothes. And lo and behold, right there from Shantipur, which was across the river, there came in a boat Advaita Acharya carrying fresh clothes. And then Mahaprabhu looked at Advaita Acharya and said, I'm confused. How come you are here? I am supposed to be Vrindavan. Nityanand told me this is Yamuna and this is Vrindavan. So how come you are here? So then he understood that he was tricked. And he said, Nityananda, you tricked me. You said this was Yamuna, but this is actually the Ganga. And then Nityananda said, No. Look, when Yamuna and Ganga meet at the Triveni Sangam in Prayag, it is Yamuna who flows along from the western side and Ganga comes from the eastern side. So you are now on the western side. So you are on the side on which Yamuna flows. So actually you have taken bath in the Yamuna, so I did not cheat you. I spoke the truth. So in any case, so then they came to Shantipur, there Sachi Mata came, and then the decision was taken that he should move to Jagannath Puri. Anyway, later as well, when he was in Puri, especially in the Antya Leela, the later pastimes of the Lord, he would sometimes mistake the sea for the Yamuna and he would jump in. And the devotees would always be with him standing guard to ensure that he wouldn't do something like that. And invariably he would do it. One time he jumped into the sea. He escaped from the guard of the devotees. He jumped into the sea thinking it to be the Yamuna. And in his transcendental ecstasy, he was carried away by the waves. He ended up at Konark, where the sun temple is. He was caught in a fisherman's net and brought onto the shore. And the devotees were mad in anxiety. And they went along the sea coast all the way up to Konark, searching, asking people. Finally, they found him. When Mahaprabhu was also traveling towards Vrindavan and he passed through the Jharikhanda forest, he saw the rivers there, thought them to be Yamuna and jumped in them. So whenever he saw rivers, he would jump in because he would be in that transcendental ecstasy. At Prayag also, when he saw the blackish, glossy water of the Yamuna, he jumped in. And then the devotees pulled him out. And he was still in that mood. So they pulled him back onto the boat. And he was still in his ecstasy. So he began dancing and dancing so violently that the boat was shaking and the devotees were afraid that the boat would capsize. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was quite big in size. He was 7 feet tall. And this is that scene that you see in the picture now. And there's water everywhere. You can see, imagine the condition of the devotees. And this was also when Vallabh Bhatta was there. Also, when he came to Vrindavan, he would jump into the Yamuna anytime he saw the Yamuna. And also at Akrur Ghat, where the Yamuna flowed in those days, just 500 years ago. The Yamuna has changed course quite a bit in these 500 years. And Balabhadra Bhattacharya couldn't see Mahaprabhu and he ran and he saw that Mahaprabhu had jumped into the ocean, into the river, and he was not to be seen. So he also jumped into the river and somehow or the other with great difficulty pulled him out. And then he spoke to the Sanodiya Brahman and Rajput, who was there, Rajput Krishna Das, and said, this is too much. Wherever he sees Yamuna, he just jumps in like this. And what do we do? What if something were to happen? What if I had not been there at that time? What would have happened? So I think we have to leave Brajbhumi now. So they approached Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and they convinced him to leave Vrindavan and go back towards Puri. So anyway, this happened over here. And when Mahaprabhu used to take bath in the Yamuna, he would chant this beautiful verse. So kindly repeat this verse after me. I'll read the translation first. O River Yamuna, you are the blissful spiritual water that gives love to the son of Nanda Maharaj. You are the same as the water of the spiritual world, for you can vanquish all our offenses and the sinful reactions incurred in life. You are the creator of all auspicious things for the world. O daughter of the sun god, kindly purify us by your pious activities. Chidananda Bhano Sadananda Suno. పరప్రేమ పాత్రి ద్రవ బ్రహ్మ గాత్రి అఘానామ్ల విత్రి జగత్క్షేమ ధాత్రి పవిత్రీ క్రియాన్నో వపుర్మిత్ర పుత్రీ చిదానంద భానో సదానంద సునో పరప్రేమ పాత్రి ద్రవ బ్రహ్మ గాత్రి అఘానామ్ల విత్రి జగత్క్షేమ ధాత్రి పవిత్రీ క్రియాన్నో వపుర్మిత్ర పుత్రీ So whenever you're able to go to Vrindavan next, or you come to the Yamuna in any way at any point, do remember to recite this verse. Even if you can't memorize it, at least write it down and carry it with you, so that when you offer obeisances to the Yamuna, you can also recite this beautiful verse. The worship of Yamuna, like the worship of Ganga, as we mentioned yesterday, is also Tadiya Upasana. It is Pada Sevanam. It is included in the category of serving the lotus feet of the Lord. Yamuna is worshipped by all great devotees. The banks of the Yamuna are considered glorious. They give us access to the greatest wealth. We have other banks that have some plastic currency and digital currency, and we go to these banks to withdraw and deposit money, but they do not really give us real treasure. The real treasure are here on the banks of the Yamuna. This is the real bank we want to bank on. You can bank on this bank, but you can't bank on the banks of this world, that will only give you the money of this world. So it is explained by Mahaprabhu that there are five most potent forms of devotional service: sadhu sanga nama kirtan bhagavata shravana mathura vasa shri murtira shraddhaya sevana. So the association of devotees, the congregational chanting of the holy names of Krishna, the hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam, living in the dham of the Lord like Mathura, and serving with faith the deity of the Lord are the five most potent forms of devotional service. And serving or living on the banks of the Yamuna and serving the Yamuna will also fall in this category of living there, of Mathura Vas, because the Yamuna flows through the whole Brajamandal. So worship of the Yamuna is very important for us, serving the Yamuna in every way. As I was mentioning yesterday and day before, there are many ways to serve the Dham. You can remember the Dham, you can glorify the Dham, you can chant aloud the names of the Dham, you can actually offer obeisances to the Dham, circumambulate it, you can sit on the banks of the Dham or inside the Dham. And when it comes to rivers, you can also help in so many other ways, like cleaning. And the river Yamuna, unfortunately today, is in great need of cleaning. Even at Prabhupada's time, when he bathed in the Yamuna, the water was clean. This is a picture of Srila Prabhupada entering into the Yamuna. And there was a time, but unfortunately today, we have a great crisis in the Yamuna. The Yamuna is extraordinarily polluted. There are two problems with the Yamuna now. Pollution and diversion of her waters. As she flows down from the Himalayas into the plains at a certain point, almost all of the water of the Yamuna is diverted for industrial enterprises, for domestic consumption, and also for agricultural use. And then the farmers there, they grow rice and so on, but not for local consumption, for export. And what flows after that is not really Yamuna at all. And then when it comes in Delhi, all the effluents from the industries, the sewage, domestic sewage and everything, all the wastewater, it all flows into the Yamuna. So unfortunately, much except in the rainy season, much of what flows down past Vrindavan is not really the Yamuna. This is a very great tragedy of our time. Many people have been doing many things to reverse this, to stop it. Many of our devotees have, and others also who are not ISKCON devotees, they have been agitating for the stoppage of this pollution, and also for ensuring that the water is not diverted from the Yamuna, that the water should be left unpolluted, and that the flow should not be interrupted. And we have a little film here, a short film made. It is a trailer of a documentary film. It's called The Stolen River. Fortunately, today, efforts are being made over the last few years, so we hope and pray that there will be very significant improvement as far as both these aspects of the Yamuna are concerned, the pollution and the diversion of the water. So this is just a 3 minutes trailer, and I believe it's also available, right? The film is, where is it available? Okay. Okay, so the full film will be coming up very shortly. But meanwhile, you can just take a look at the trailer about some young devotees who are bemoaning or lamenting the fact that Yamuna is not Yamuna anymore.
This is the most sacred place in all of India for all of us Indians. I was born in India. I grew up in the United States. I came to Vrindavan to understand my roots better and connect with my culture better. I came here to ask Mother Yamuna for her blessings because I will play her role in my next dance to show her personality. When I came to Vrindavan, I was like, okay, let's go take a bath in the Yamuna. And I heard some devotees tell me, don't go there.
ये जो गाय है यमुना जी का विषैला पानी पीकर
Child mortality and infant mortality is high because of the pollution.
हम चलना चाहेंगे क्योंकि हमारी यमुना जी कैदी बनी हुई है
यमुना जी हमारी माँ है
उनको लाने के लिए हमको अपनी जान भी देनी पड़े तो
बता पैसे मिलते हैं डेड बॉडी मिलता है उसे निकाल के बाहर कर देता है आदमी आते बताने
What you're seeing here is a dead river. It's the sewage of Delhi. And that's about it. There's nothing more to it.
ये शुद्ध पानी है, जितना भी गंदा हो शुद्ध पानी है.
द फ्यूचर ऑफ आवर कंट्री इज इन डार्कनेस.
वेयर वी आर द ग्रैंड ओल्ड रिवर ऑफ इंडिया कंप्लीटली ड्राई, बोन ड्राई.
इट्स लाइक द रिवर इज कंप्लीटली स्टोलन.
We are marching with 500,000 people to Delhi.
My family, all of us here in the West, unknowingly were contributing heavily into the now dead river.
People all over the world, hundreds of thousands of people, are demanding change.
Whether you are Indian or not does not matter. We are one global community.
मैं जल यहाँ से जरूर लेके जाऊंगी. बहुत लोगों को ये नहीं पता है कि सच में यमुना जी ब्रज में नहीं है. बहुत लोगों ने ये भी नहीं देखा है कि यमुना जी का असली जल क्या है. ठाकुर जी से भी प्रेयर करूंगी, राधा रानी से प्रेयर करूंगी, यमुना जी से प्रेयर करूंगी कि आप जल्दी से जल्दी ब्रज में आए.
Okay, so that was an indication of the tragedy of River Yamuna, and many of our rivers are like that, many of the sacred rivers. So fortunately, over the last several years, as I mentioned, there is encouraging news, a lot of efforts are going on, but it's a gigantic task. It's not going to be easy, and we hope and pray that the efforts will bear fruit. Devotees from around the world can continue to put pressure, raise awareness, when you go back, so that this will become a pressing issue even more so than at present. This is our sacred heritage, our holy places, our holy rivers. So we have to preserve them very, very carefully. And even apart from the religious and spiritual significance, even for our very survival, we need these rivers. So anyway, on the positive note, that a lot is being done now, and we hope that efforts will bear fruit. Let's now move on from the Yamuna to the river Godavari. So the river Godavari, yes, it's one of the chief rivers of India, actually. It divides North India and South India. It's the second longest river in the country, 1465 kilometers long, as you can see. It passes through 6 states of India. And its origin is in the Nasik district of the state of Maharashtra. It flows eastwards. It has one of the largest river basins of India after the Ganga. The origin is in Brahmagiri mountain. The Godavari, by the way, is also called the Dakshin Ganga or the Ganga of the South. So here you can get an idea of the different sacred rivers in peninsular India. You have the Godavari there marked in bold. It starts from the western coast, about 80 kilometers from the western coast. It begins there on a hill called Brahmagiri. It flows in the southeasterly direction and then meets the Gulf von Bengalen, whichever language that is. It's the Bay of Bengal. And it comes and flows into the Bay of Bengal. And you can see the other rivers, Krishna and Kaveri, which are also east flowing. Krishna, Kaveri, both. If time permits, we'll talk about these two also tomorrow. And then we'll definitely talk tomorrow about Narmada and Tapti, which flow westwards. Mahanadi, we may not have time to talk. It flows in Orissa and goes and meets the Bay of Bengal. So here, the Godavari is joined by many, many tributaries, which fill its waters, and it swells up. It eventually enters into the Bay of Bengal. Let's follow the Godavari from her point of origin. And the point of origin is in the place called Brahmagiri Mountain. It's in the Sahyadri Hills. Adri means a hill. The name of these hills, this whole range is called Sahya. So Sahya and Adri, so Sahyadri. In fact, the entire western coastline of India, starting from the southernmost tip all the way up to Gujarat. Here you can see all the way up to Narmada and way down till the southern tip is all the western ghats. That is here, all the way from here, all the way down along the coast. There's just a little strip along the coast which is flat land. And then immediately you rise and there's a plateau. So this whole is the Deccan Plateau. So there is a coast and then it rises up to the plateau. And then again there's the eastern coast where the plateau again declines in height. So these rivers, they all start from the Sahyadri here. These start from the Deccan Plateau, the western coast, and come here. So the origins of the Godavari are in the Brahmagiri Mountain, which is in the Sahyadri or in the Western Ghats. It is the first peak of the Sahyadri range, actually, the topmost, the northernmost. Some consider this hill to be the form of Lord Shiva. It is said that when Lord Shiva one time was pleased with Brahma, he said, "I shall name this mountain after you." And therefore this mountain became known as Brahmagiri. Giri also means mountain. It is said that the sage Gautam and his wife Ahalya lived here. How many of you have heard the names of Gautam and Ahalya? In what connection? Ram. In Ram Leela. So you'll see this whole place is very intimately connected with Lord Ram's pastimes. And we'll come to that shortly. So, because the origin of the Ganga, of the Godavari, is from here, the place of Gautam Rishi, so it's also called the Gautami Ganga. And it is actually the Ganga River. And we'll see very shortly how so. So the Godavari flows in three directions on Brahmagiri. The part that flows south is called the Vaitarna River. So there are so many sacred rivers, small rivers, so many of them all over India. Actually. And there's another one, which is the main one, the main Godavari, that flows eastwards. And the one that flows west comes back and meets the main Godavari again at a place called Chakratirtha. There's also a river called the Ahalya, which meets the Godavari at a place called Trimbakeshwar. So, before that, let's see why the Godavari is called the Ganga and why it's called the Gautami Ganga. These pastimes are described in the Brahma Purana and also the Narad Purana. Now I will not narrate the whole pastime because it's very long. I'll summarize it as follows. In the Satya Yuga, there was a sacrifice performed by Brahma. And in the course of performing the sacrifice, he dug the field and it struck a chest. When they opened the chest, they found a very beautiful young lady who emerged. And everybody who was present there wanted to marry her. So it became very difficult. So then Brahma said, okay, let there be a contest. And whoever wins the contest will also win the hands of this fair maiden in marriage. And the contest is that you have to run around the globe. And you have to circle the globe and come. And whoever comes first will be able to marry this girl. So many of the kings and everyone had come and they were all eager to marry her. So they all rushed. And there was a sage, Gautam. He was not that young. And plus he was a sage. He wasn't like a Kshatriya athlete or something. So he also partook. He also wanted to marry this lady. So he also began. But he was slow and everybody else had moved way ahead of him and he was trudging along. And he found this cow who was just giving birth to a calf. And immediately he circumambulated that cow and the calf. And he came back to Brahma, who was waiting at Brahmagiri. And Brahma was surprised to see him coming, first of all, from the direction in which everyone had left. He should have come from the other direction, if at all he had completed the race. He thought maybe he's given up halfway. But Gautam Rishi declared, "No, I have won." When Brahma didn't, he ignored it, so he repeated, "I have won." So Brahma said, "How so? You haven't gone around the earth." He said, "Yes, it is mentioned in the scriptures that if one circumambulates a cow who is about to give birth to a calf, that is as good as circumambulating the whole earth. It's like doing bhu pradakshina. Bhu means the earth, pradakshina means circumambulation. So go pradakshina, circumambulating a cow who is giving birth to a calf, is equal to circumambulating the whole earth." So Brahma bought into that logic. And then he arranged for the wedding. Meanwhile, the other suitors came along and there was a hue and cry, as you can well imagine. And then Brahma managed to pacify them. And then Gautam Rishi was married off to this lady who was called Ahalya. But then Gautam Rishi had a problem. Lord Shiva was also present there. He said, "Where do I live now? I have a wife. I have to start my grihastha ashram. So where do I live?" So then Lord Shiva gave him this mountain of his. He said, "You stay here at Brahmagiri." So then he continued to stay there. And then as he was living there happily, there were other things going on at Mount Kailas, where Lord Shiva was living with his family and all was not well there. Some family affairs were going on there. And again, it's a long pastime, so I won't get into it. But suffice it to say that so many things happened as a result of which a cow, a transcendental conspiracy was hatched. And this cow came into certain fields. There was a drought everywhere. And the only place there wasn't a drought was around the Brahmagiri area. So everybody flocked to this area. And Gautam Rishi was extremely busy feeding everyone, sowing the seeds, harvesting the crops, and cooking and feeding everybody. And as he was tending to his fields, this huge cow came there and started eating the crops. And Gautam Rishi just threw a few blades of the sacred kusha grass on the cow. And the cow fell down dead. Now, the cow doesn't fall dead just by throwing a few blades of grass on her. But in this case, she did. And then everybody was aghast. And they said, "Oh, you have killed a cow. You have done gohatya. This is such a grievous sin." And they all left that place. And he was shocked, Gautam Rishi. "How on earth did this happen?" And then at that time, he was wondering what to do. And then he decided to petition Lord Shiva. Because he was told that only if the river Ganga comes here and you take bath in her and you sprinkle the water of the Ganga on this cow and she comes back to life, only then you will get freed from the reactions of this sin. So he performed austerities for a long time to please Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva appeared and he agreed to bring Ganga down. So Ganga was already in the matted locks of his hair. So he removed his matted lock and thrashed them on the rocks of Brahmagiri. And then a portion of Ganga, the Ganga water, came on. And that is how the Ganga came to the Brahmagiri mountain. And therefore, she is also called Gautami Ganga, because she advented due to Gautam Rishi. And she called Dakshin Ganga because it was the same Ganga who manifested or advented in the south. So very important. So the Godavari River is actually the very same Ganga. There is no difference between the two. So she is also called Godavari Ganga. Now, Gautam Rishi took his bath in the Ganga. He absolved himself of the sin of killing the cow. He became free of that sin. And then he sprinkled Ganga water on the cow. And the cow also came back to life. And she pardoned the sage. And then she left. And because this was the place, this was the river that gave life to the cow, she is called Goda or Godavari. So that is how the name Godavari came. It's a very interesting pastime, which I have told you in very brief today. So what the point to remember here is that Godavari is directly the Ganga. There's no difference. Trimbakeshwar, which is right next door, so to speak, is the place where there is one of the 12 Jyotirlingas, one of the 12 well-known places of worship of Lord Shiva. Very powerful place of Lord Shiva's presence. So this is the place where many, many people go on pilgrimage. It is about 25 kilometers from the city of Nasik. And there is the deity of Godavari. She is none other than Goddess Ganga. And at Nasik, you have the Ganga Ghat. Nasik is a city. It's probably the fourth or fifth largest city in the state of Maharashtra. It's a very ancient city. And it's about 25 kilometers from Trimbakeshwar. And there are several other important rivers like the Vaitarna and the Bhima, which also pass through Nasik. There are many holy places in and around Nasik. The place of Panchavati, Tapovan, etc., they're all there. Why is this place called Nasik? Does anyone know? How many of you have heard of this town called Nasik? Okay, why is it called Nasik? Does anyone know? Yes? Shurpanakha. Okay, yes. Because it was in this region, not in Nasik city proper, but it was in this region that Lakshman cut off the nose of the demoness Shurpanakha. Actually, he cut it on the opposite other side of the river in Panchavati, and then he threw the nose across the river, Godavari. And the nose landed in this place. So in Sanskrit, it's called Nasika or Nasa. So from Nasa or Nasika, this place became known as Nasik because of the nose of Shurpanakha. So see, even if you're a big demon, but if you're hurt or killed by the Lord, then you also become immortalized. Yes? So people will remember you long, long years later also. So this is the Nasik city, Ganga Ghat. It's about 6 hours by road from the northern part of Bombay. If any of you want to go there sometimes, we also have a nice ISKCON temple there, a nice community of devotees. So the Kumbh Mela happens in this region here. There are four places where the Kumbh Mela happens. Which are those four places? Who can say? Yes? Now, which are the four places where the Kumbh Mela happens? Raise your hand, somebody. Yes? Nasik, Ujjain, Haridwar, and Allahabad. Yes, these four. And each, you have to bathe in certain places. So, when it's in Ujjain, you bathe in the river Kshipra. When it's in Nasik, you bathe in the Godavari. When it's in Allahabad or Prayag, you bathe in the Triveni Sangam, the confluence of the Ganga, Yamuna, Saraswati. And when it is in Haridwar, you bathe in Ganga. So a Kumbh Mela is also held here in Nasik. And there are large crowds that gather here. And Kushavarta Kund. So the Godavari actually originates midway in Mount Brahmagiri. Then it flows under the surface and comes out at Kushavartakund. So this is the place where the river comes out again. And then again it goes underground and comes up later. So this is the Kushavartakund. This is where there is a temple of goddess Godavari that we just saw next to the Kund. This is the place where the Kumbh Mela is held. Lord Shiva told all the sacred places and the lakes that they should come here, especially during the Kumbh Mela, and bathe for the sake of their own purification. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to Nasik as well. He came after sannyas. He went from Jagannath Puri all the way down along the eastern coast of India, went down to the southernmost tip, and came northwards again along the western coast, sometimes going left and right. And then he came up, he went all the way up to this place, to Brahmavarta. He came to Brahmavarta, he came to Nasik, he went to Trimbakeshwar, he had darshan of Lord Shiva there, he bathed in the Godavari here, he went to Panchavati. So Mahaprabhu was here. And his footprints have the imprint are at the Balaji temple at Nasik. And then this is Panchavati. You see, this is part of the place called Dandakaranya that is mentioned by Valmiki Muni in the Ramayana. So one part of the Dandakaranya is this Panchavati. Panchavati so called because there are five vata trees, banyan trees here at different locations. And Lord Ram stayed here for a long time, along with Sita Devi and Lord Lakshman. They lived here. It is north of Nasik. And it is on the other side of the Godavari from Nasik town. It is here that Lakshman cut off Sita's, Shurpanakha's nose, and threw the nose across the Godavari into Nasik. This is also the place where Lord Ram fought with 14,000 Rakshasas, demons. Single-handedly, in 2 hours, he killed them, standing at the same spot, without moving his feet. That is also called Janasthan in the Valmiki Ramayana. And in order that Sita not come to any harm, he placed her in a cave and told Lakshman to stand guard. And he said, you don't leave this place at any cost. I'll deal with all the demons. So then Lord Ram defeated those 14,000 demons in 2 hours. And the place where Sita was for some time is called Sita Gufa. So we'll come to that as well. So this is a picture of Lakshman cutting off Shurpanakha's nose. So this is also the place, Panchavati, where the associate of Ravana, Marij, came disguised as the golden deer. And this is the place where Ravana came later and abducted Sita. And we'll see later, there's an Agni Tirtha around nearby, at a place called Tapovan, where the real Sita was kept, and a Maya Sita, or a shadow Sita, came, and she was the one who was actually abducted by Ravana. And Mahaprabhu has explained this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that demons can have no access to the goddess of fortune. There's no way they can touch them. They can't even come near them. So this is Panchavati, where many pastimes happened. And then nearby is Tapovan. Tapovan, as the name indicates, is the place, the forest, where there is tapasya, where sages of yore would go to do austerities. So this is a long history of sages coming here for austerities. Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. So here there are some images of Sita, Ram, Lakshman at Tapovan. And interestingly, there's another river there which is called River Kapila. And this Kapila meets the River Godavari, and there is a confluence at this place, Tapovan. It's a beautiful place. It's called Kapila Tirtha. And this is where Kapila Dev instructed his mother, Devahuti, in the principles of devotional service. Yes? And these are the four Tirtha Kundas there, Brahma Tirtha, Shiva Tirtha, Vishnu Tirtha, and Agni Tirtha. Parnakuti Temple. Parna means leaf. So Lord Ram lived there in a cottage that was made by Lakshman. And that cottage was made from wood and it had a thatched roof with leaves and so on. And this is a Sita Gufa, the cave of Sita Devi. And here, at this place in Tapovan, actually many sadhus come here and live during the Kumbh Mela. More than 25,000-50,000 sadhus who live here, and then they go to Panchavati or Nasik or Kushavartakund and they come back. But this is the place exclusively reserved for the sadhus. Okay, so what we'll do is now we'll stop here. There's a little more about Godavari, which we'll do tomorrow. And then we'll start on Saraswati, and then we'll go on to Narmada, Sindhu, Kaveri, and we'll see. Tomorrow we have only one day, but we'll cover as much as we can tomorrow. Okay, so now you can chant after me, Godavari.
Godavari.
Hey Godavari.
Hey Godavari.
Hey Gange.
Hey Gange.
Hey Yamune. Shri Shri Radha Gokul Anand ki Jai, Shri Shri Sita Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki Jai, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai ki Jai, Gaur Premanande, Hare Krishna.